Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now, here's Chris Walton and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
It is Bronco Monday, and hey, third time in a row we get to talk about a win. This is fun.
It is fun. 5-2, more importantly, 3-0 in the league, and you beat Wyoming, so now you have the tiebreaker over Wyoming if things were to come to the end of the year at the division, and Boise State and Colorado State, the only two teams left on the mountainside that haven't lost. But this was a game that, you know, 7-3 down at halftime, and then the second half, completely the fortunes changed for Boise State, and I thought played one of their best halves of football of the season.
Yeah, but definitely in the second half. And, you know, but even at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it was still kind of up in the air.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the numbers in the first half, 7-3. Wyoming had the edge yardage-wise, 145 to 118. And the reason they did that is because they were better on third downs in the first half. They converted 4 out of 8 compared to Boise State's 1 out of 6. Wyoming ran 39 plays in the first half to Boise State's 25. So they had the much better of the play. That interception by DeAndre Pierce kind of negated a little bit of their advantage because he ran it back 55, almost 50 yards, 45 yards for the on the return, set him up with a short field, and ended up getting a field goal of that. But in the second half, it changed. Almost 2-1 in plays run. Boise State ran 43 to Wyoming's 22. The yardage was 224 to 97. And third downs flipped. Boise State made 6 of 9 on third down, and Wyoming only made 2 out of 5.
For the second week in a row, Boise State basically said, okay, give us somebody that's supposed to be an award candidate or an All-America, and we will stop that person.
And they did it by really showing him different things, different parts of the game. I mean, they had two nice drives. They had the first drive of the game, which, you know, they came right down the field, mixed the run and the pass, and he was the run, so it was his legs and his arm that brought him down. And then after Boise State had that 18-play drive that took nearly two-thirds of the third quarter, they came back down with about a five-minute drive and scored. But after that, it was 3 and out. And, you know, they rushed him at times, they dropped people at times, and I think they kept giving Josh Allen something a little bit different to look at. And towards the end of the game, I think the pressure kind of got a little bit more and more and more for Boise State, and it paid off, and they finished the game with 4 sacks.
On the other side of the ball, it's always cliche in sports radio, quarterback controversy.
Oh.
But we were just talking off air a little bit that this does not feel like that, and it's because of the way that the coaches really have handled this.
Well, in the first time this year, in my opinion, they really used two quarterbacks basically almost 50-50, and they ran them like running backs or a wide receiver where, you know, you'll substitute Wolpin for Madison, sure, and nobody
right.
thinks anything of it. You know, doing the play-by-play, you really had to be on point with who the quarterback was, mm-hmm. because in the middle of the drive, they'd switch quarterbacks 3 or 4 times. I mean, the numbers end up ripping 12 of 17, 104 passing. Cozart, 6 of 7, 73 yards passing. Cozart ended up with 52 yards rushing, couple of touchdowns. Rippon finished with 7 yards rushing, but he had a nice 12-yard run on a scramble very early in the game. So I've never seen teams manipulate the quarterbacks like that with as much success as Boise State had with it on Saturday night.
And I like that comparison, too. I mean, they don't think a thing about it if you do it with a tailback or a wide receiver. You just, you know, somebody goes out, somebody else comes in, and generally the quarterback doesn't work that way. Like Peyton Manning, somebody said something about, you know, would you like somebody to come in who can run? And he said, no, that would be the absolute last thing that will ever happen. It didn't matter
well,
who
he
was.
He could probably say that because he was a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But no, it's been a good effort. Boise State now will go down to Utah State on Saturday and need to keep the ball rolling. Last time we went to Logan wasn't one of the finest hours, so hopefully we can remember that and come up with a little better performance. But we'll hear from Coach Harsin coming up in just a second when we come back on Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
We're back on Bronco Monday. I'm Chris Walton along with Jay Bates and Bob Beeler.
Yeah, and we're talking about Boise State's win over Wyoming, 24-14, won the turnover battle 2-0, and really had a fine second half. We'll hear a little bit from Coach Harsin from our conversation post-game. And the first thing we asked was just kind of give an overview of the game. And obviously, when you win a division game against Wyoming, a team that beat you last year, you sound pretty pleased.
We're the most physical team. and we made some plays when we needed to. Especially in the third quarter there, I thought it was, to see the offense go down there and put a drive together and score, defense to finish the game with the turnover, and to have a two in the game there. We won the turnover battle, won the field position battle. So the things that we talked about, and the coaches and the players went out there and they executed it tonight and they did a great job.
And I think one of the things that good coaches do is figure out what you have and how to accentuate it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a 50-point-a-game team. You've got a good defense. You've got very good special teams this year. And I think as the season is moving along, I think the coaches are understanding their personnel better and doing a better job, because they understand it, of putting people in situations where they can be successful. You don't want to do things that you're not capable of, and you want to do things that you are capable of. And I think that, you know, you have to look and play to your strengths.
Like they say in the kitchen, I mean, you don't make a dish that has ingredients that you don't have.
Yeah. I mean, it really is pretty simple, isn't it? And Coach Harsin was asked by us about the offense, how the offense had three long drives in the second half that resulted in 21 points.
I thought we were more consistent. I thought Coach Hill did a great job with the play selection in there as well, and we were able to kind of just hit on the outside, hit the inside. We had a few throws in there. The quarterbacks did a really good job because we had protection from the O-line, and they were able to stand in there and get to their second and third reads, and those guys were making plays. I think it was really more about consistency. The offensive staff did a great job of going out there and laying out a plan for the second half. This is what we need to do. You know, our second half adjustments were better than they've been, and the players went out there and executed it. So,
and they were better, and when you look at what the offense was able to do, I think they felt that Wyoming might have been a little more vulnerable to the pass because mm-hmm. they threw the ball a lot more than they did the previous week at San Diego State, where in the second half they hardly threw the ball at all. They brought Cozart in. He was basically running the zone read to Madison, and that was it. Madison falls just short of 100 at 91, but I think it was more to the fact that they picked up much more through the air against Wyoming than they did against San Diego.
It's kind of an interesting concept that you figure out what the team you're playing is good at and throw that at them.
That happens. That's good coaching, too.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things I thought I noticed was that physicality, especially in the first half, because it was a hard-hitting game. I think that wears on a team, especially a road team. You get into that second half, that can be the difference.
Well, and then you look at the first drive of the second half. I mean, Wyoming's defense was out there for nearly 10 minutes of action. I mean, the third quarter had two drives, and Wyoming came back with a near five-minute drive, and I think Boise State had the kickoff and I think one play with a third drive, their second drive. So Wyoming's defense was on the field, and then when the offense gets two, three, and outs in the fourth quarter, I think that has a way of really tiring the defense out, and I think the second and third drives were helped out by the fact that the first drive took almost 10 minutes.
Which I think was evident in those back-to-back touchdown drives by Boise State. You just ground them down.
Mm-hmm. And then the defense, of course, continued to play well, talked about how they adjusted in the second half and how they stopped Josh Allen throughout the game.
I thought we just did a good job of mixing up pressures, mixing up some coverages, and you know, we were able to slow them down enough at the end of the game where when we had a chance to get up, they had to throw it, and so now we could get some pass rush, Jabril and the defensive line stepping up again and really hammering the run. And trying to make him one-dimensional to where they had to throw it. He was a factor in the run game, Josh was. And, you know, he did a great job there, and we were able to tackle him. But we didn't allow any touchdown runs, you know, which is what he had done before. You know, some really big runs in there and some of those opportunities. So I thought, you know, just the mixture of changing some of that up, guys in the back end making tackles when they needed to, you know, obviously gives us a chance for another down.
Allen's numbers weren't fantastic. Four sacks, two interceptions, only threw for 131, but he does run the ball pretty well as he rushed for 62 yards. Would have been 85 if sacks didn't come off it. We'll be back with more of Bronco Monday here on 670 KBOI.
We're back on Bronco Monday.
Looking at the week, we will have our coaches show Thursday night at 7 o'clock right here on 670 KBOI. If you missed some of the Mountain West scores, high-scoring game, Air Force beat Nevada. Colorado State squeaked by New Mexico. They remain unbeaten, 4-0. They've played one more game. They have their bye, interestingly enough, the last week of the regular season over Thanksgiving. Not a good spot for a bye. Mm-hmm. I guess unless you're in the championship game, then it might be a real good spot for a bye. Boise State with their win over Wyoming, 24-14, also 3-0. Wyoming now a game back at 2-1 with their loss. But maybe the biggest thing out west, San Diego State was crushed by Fresno State. 2 weeks in a row, the Aztecs have lost at home after being 6-0. Fresno State 27, San Diego State 3. Fresno State is now two games ahead of San Diego State. Three, if you really count the tiebreaker. Fresno has four games left, and to win the division, they only have to win two of them.
Yeah, I was mentioning it to you earlier. That team is scary. He has done something with them offensively. Mm-hmm. They're still tough. I mean, you talk about a physical team. Fresno is that.
Fresno won one game last year. It was not against an FBS team. They picked them last to begin the Mountain West season. I said they weren't coming in last because I thought Tedford was too good of a coach.
Yep.
But I figured that all they have to do is either beat UNLV or San Jose to be not last in their division. They're not only not going to be last, they are going to win the division. They have Hawaii that they need to beat. If you're going to look at two wins, they can beat Hawaii and they can beat UNLV. And then they could lose to Wyoming and Boise State. That's your two wins. You could do better than that.
Right.
But I think winning two games, I think Fresno State is looking great for the conference championship.
At San Diego State, they have to be completely surprised. They were number 19 in the country, and they've lost 2 weeks in a row.
31-14 and 27-3. It's not like you got beat by a field goal at the end or there was some fluke play. You got handed to 2 weeks in a row at home. Shocking.
And talk about how that kind of opens up for Boise State now. I mean, it's been a while. Nobody around here has enjoyed that championship game. Is it time to start thinking about tickets and
travel? Well, 2014 is the last time Boise State was in the championship. Didn't make it in 15 or 16. A lot of football to be played. You're probably going to have to run the table to get there.
Right.
Because you know you'll get there if you run the table because you beat Colorado State and you'd be undefeated in the division. But there's some hard games left. If you drop a game, then it's probably going to come down to some sort of a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. Then it will come down to which of the two teams is either rated higher in the college football playoff. Probably neither will find their way into the top 25.
No.
Which would mean that it would go to computers to decide who the home team would be, whether it would be here or whether it would be in Fresno. And considering Boise State and Fresno play the last game of the regular season the Saturday after Thanksgiving, it might come down to who wins that game head-to-head. So if Boise goes down to Fresno and wins, the game is probably here. If Boise would lose that game and still have enough to win the division, they might have to win it to win the division,
right?
But then it would probably be there, especially if they were able to win enough other games.
It feels as if the defense is ready for anybody.
Mm-hmm. I think the defense is, but I think the offense is getting better, and that's what I like about the way the team is headed. You could definitely say, as the season is, you know, we move past the halfway point, the arrow is pointing up. I have a better feeling about this team today than I did coming out of, say, the win against BYU.
I guess it's good that they're getting better every game, which is, you know, was the cliche around here forever. Take it one game at a time and get better as the season goes on. But that's what we're seeing now.
And I think when you look at it, there are only 15 seniors on the roster, and some of them don't play. So you've got a very young team, a lot of true sophomores playing, some redshirt freshmen that are playing. So I think you see more improvement in younger players than you do somebody that gets to be a junior senior, especially if they've played a lot.
Did I just hear you say we're going to a New Year's bowl game next year?
No. I don't think this year. I think the winner of the American's going to get it this year.
Bob Beter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Good Monday morning to you, Chris Walton, along with Jay Bates, who is in for Paul J. Schneider this morning.
Good morning, everybody.
And I wanted to start off this morning by talking a little bit about Bo Bergdahl. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl spent, as you know, 5 years. He's from Haley, Idaho. So that's why we talk about him so often. But, you know, he's been in the national news as well. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl spent 5 years held captive by the Taliban. And depending upon the outcome of his sentencing hearing, he could spend the rest of his life in prison behind bars. I've heard from a lot of different people, and we talked about this last week and a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of different people wrote in to say, especially veterans, to say that they really had no sympathy for this whatsoever, or for him. Bergdahl pleaded guilty last week to misbehavior before the enemy and desertion. His sentencing hearing is starting today. He I mean, we know basically the facts of it now. He deserted from his outpost in Afghanistan in June of 2009, and several hours later he was captured by the Taliban. He was eventually released in what was a controversial prisoner swamp, controversial mainly because we gave up five to get one, detainees at Guantanamo Bay. During a hearing last week, Bergdahl told the judge, Army Colonel Jeffrey Nance, that he was trying to reach the base from where he was dispatched. However, you know, it doesn't matter what he was trying to do. You don't simply walk off your post when you're supposed to be doing something else.
No, that is the job.
Yeah. Bergdahl said he wanted to report a critical problem in my chain of command. And I suppose you can't go to your immediate superior because that's probably the problem that you're wanting to report.
But did not
specify what that problem was.
Who was he going to tell?
Well,
wandering around in the desert.
I don't know. Somebody at least two ranks up, I'm guessing.
I was going to see a man about a horse.
Well, yeah, or a camel or whatever. I left my observation post on my own, Bergdahl told the judge last week. I understand leaving was against the law. The judge said Bergdahl faces up to life in prison, but that doesn't mean he'll necessarily get it. There are some people who said, well, he was a prisoner for 5 years with the Taliban, and he claims that he made somewhere between 12 and 15 escape attempts, and that he was, you know, severely beaten when this happened, and he was as tortured, he says. So there are some people who say, you know, isn't that enough? You know, that plus being stripped of your rank and kicked out of the army and whatnot. But then there are others who just simply say, that, you know, I mean, when you're in the military at all, you know that there are bad penalties for desertion.
Yeah, I don't see this one ending as some kind of a made-for-TV movie on Bo Bergdahl's life. Regardless of how it comes out, his story, how it comes out, is probably not going to be profitable for him, I would definitely say. Is that the easy way to put that? This is not your typical war hero story, even if he somehow gets a light sentence.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it won't be a movie at some point.
Yeah.
But I sort of doubt it'll portray him in a sympathetic light. Bergdahl previously described the torture he endured, which included months chained to a bed and years either locked in a cage or chained on all fours. I know that would have driven me absolutely insane. Not that that's, you know, it's more of a putt than a drive anyway. Okay. If you'd like to make a comment on this, 208-336-3700.
All right, let's go to Jim in Boise.
Let's do it.
Morning. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, how's it going?
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing well.
Okay, I just wanted to bring up something that maybe nobody's thought about. But, you know, when the draft stopped, the Army had to do something to get recruits. And I think they hired Madison Avenue. Now, you might remember a cute little quirk that they had. They're saying, an army of one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, now, that was a big advertising campaign, mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was. Now, right on the surface, that's asinine and doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you the newest generation a sense that they've got independence. You know, I think that that might have a bit of a mindset who joins the Army these days.
It's possible. And yeah, that was an odd ad campaign. But based on what people say about being in combat, being in war, that you know, they say that when you're out there, you don't even feel like you're fighting for a cause or a country or anything. You feel like you're fighting for the people that are standing next to you.
Yeah, it's like the exact opposite of the band of brothers if you call it an army of one at that point.
Yeah, you're trying to survive yourself and all like that. But I don't know, it just gave you, you know, they were trying to imply that you would have all sorts of opportunities. Now, for instance, I've heard things. For instance, somebody goes in, you know, they want to sign up as a truck driver, and they're assigned to be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear that all the time.
Yeah.
I went to, Texas A&M in the 60s during the war and stuff, and I had this roommate. And this guy was big and strong, He just, you know, liked to describe how it would be putting a bayonet into somebody and everything. Well, anyway, he wasn't all that great academically, so he failed out after his first semester. And I ran into a friend of his, a hometown buddy, a while back, and I asked about him. You know where they sent him? They sent him to Germany. And I said, hey, the war in Germany has been over for a while. They should have sent him to Vietnam. So, I mean, the Army does strange things.
No, that's true. You could be stationed just about anywhere.
It's true.
Jim, appreciate the call. Thank you.
There are the quirks about Army life, but I think he hit on an interesting part. I hadn't really thought it through to the empowerment of an army of one, but there, as you mentioned, it's very much about the brotherhood and the people next to you and wanting to stand up for them. And I think that probably what strikes at the heart of most veterans right now is that he's upset that he left his unit as much as anything.
Being in the Army or any branch of the service is a good thing to put on a resume. And it's very similar to, and I'll compare it to a college degree. It's very similar in its purpose in that it doesn't necessarily mean you know everything about the job that you're taking or that you were even trained for that job in particular. But if you have on your resume that you have a college degree or that you have served in the military, it indicates that you have accomplished something and can be counted upon.
Right. And again, exactly what veterans are saying when they have no sympathy for Bo Bergdahl, because you've proven that you can't be counted upon in their eyes.
KBOI News time is 9:14. We'd like to hear from you. 208-336-3700. We'll be back.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
It's 9:20 on Idaho Talks Live. Chris Walton along with Jay Bates and
Beats,
Todd
Beats,
with
Tasty
Todd.
Beats.
We're thinking about Todd with one D. As I always say, that his name is spelled T-O-D. His parents named him that so he could be closer to God. I made that up. Anyway, our KBOI rewards code for today is SENTENCE, S-E-N-T-E-N-C-E, SENTENCE. And also, it's time to find out the Paul J. play of the game. If you know the Paul J. play of the game, which Paul J. chose on the post-game show the other night, Bronco game night, call us right now at 208-336-3711, 208-336-3711, and our first correct call, you will be a winner.
That should be great. I have no idea what the play of the game would be this time. I mean, I guess I could guess. I could probably narrow it down to a half. That'd be easy, wouldn't it?
I'm going to go ahead and guess it, whatever it is. It happened in the second half.
It would have to be if it's going to be the play of the day. You might even be able to narrow it down to the fourth quarter. But I'm guessing at that point.
Very possibly. I'm thinking it might be one of two scores. But I'm not sure what he chose.
Well, he's not here.
It was a late game, so I went to bed after it was over the other night.
I went to bed at halftime, so.
So you didn't even see the.
No, I'm like, wow, that game went much better.
You woke up the next morning. Oh, great, fantastic.
I guess saying I went to bed is inaccurate. I fell asleep at halftime.
I see.
Which you can understand by watching the first half.
I get it. We've been talking about Bo Bergdahl, and what to go? We got somebody with the play of the game.
Okay. We got somebody with the play of the game. Let's go to Daryl. Daryl, do you know the Paul J. play of the game?
Yes, I do. It's a pass from Cozart to Cedric Wilson for a 24-yard touchdown.
Let's play it and find out.
Throws a dart. Wilson caught it at the 15 and sprints into the end zone. And the Broncos have a two-score lead. The score goes for 24 yards. Cozart to Wilson. And with 8:35 left, the Broncos are up 23-14.
And you're absolutely right. Congratulations to you, Daryl. And I thought we didn't know for sure, but I thought it was either that touchdown or the previous one. But
right.
Yeah, that's probably the better play.
All right, congratulations, Daryl. Thanks, and we're going to put you on hold and get your information, okay?
I think that's an okay.
I think that it is an okay.
Let's,
we do have,
okay,
another
have a caller. All right.
I believe
let's go to the phones.
John. Good morning, John.
Hang on.
John, not there. Todd with 1D is writing furiously right now because my computer screen has decided to not give us names.
I understand.
All right, let's go to Butch and Jerome. Butch, you're on 670 KBOI.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Butch.
You know, I cannot understand how anybody could say on this Bergdahl thing, well, he spent 5 years in the hands of the Taliban, so we got to adjust his sentence. The Taliban didn't come into the base and take him. The United States military didn't throw him over the fence and let him have him. He did it on his own. And I can't understand how anybody could be, I don't know, I hate to be judgmental, but brain dead enough to think that they need to give him a lesser sentence because he spent 5 years with him.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have happened, but he did what he did. And so be damned his 5 years with him. That's his fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have other people, they'll do something wrong, and they live on the lam for years and, you know, and have to hide from the, once they get caught, well, geez, you know, he spent 20 years on the lam. He didn't do nothing wrong, so we'll just let him go. That's not how it works. And he needs to stand up for what he did. People died looking for him. And I just, as far as feeling sorry for him, not in me, not one bit. So,
well,
anyway.
Butch, that's what I've heard from a lot of different people. I've heard both sides, but primarily, especially people who have been in the service have said that that you absolutely know that desertion is definitely one of the worst things you can do.
Well, that's exactly right. It is, and the thing is, if you would have had, let's just say MacArthur, Patton, they'd have put him up against the wall a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying he should be shot. That is not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But that's how things have changed. It's just that now we got to have this feel good stuff, even though he did it on his own. Nobody made him. He made the conscious decision to do it, and now we got to make, you know, got to make everybody feel good. We got to be nice. No, we don't, because there's people, there's families right now that don't have a family member because he did what he did, and they were out looking for him, trying to save him.
And one of the things I would say to that is that, I mean, we can all read our own intent into his guilty plea, but he did plead guilty, and at a certain point, has he owned up to it?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Butch. Appreciate it.
It's 9:26. We'll be right back.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
It's 9:36. It's Idaho Talks Live here on News Talk 670 KBOI. I'm Chris Walton with Jay Bates sitting in today. Instant message here. We've been talking a little bit about Bo Bergdahl, and Evan of Eagle says, for what it's worth, little or nothing. I was relayed a story about Bergdahl several years ago that paints an entirely different picture from what the public is seeing. This was from a retired military officer and given to me as casual, normal practice and quite believable. Bergdahl did nothing more than follow orders. He was given a mission, a script to follow, and was and is nothing more than a soldier obeying orders, a bad scheme concocted, I lost my place here, concocted by higher-ups that went totally wrong or terribly wrong, but not of his doing. Not my story, and I've yet to form a concrete opinion on the whole mess, but something to think about since the gentleman that relayed the story to me is someone I have always held in high regard. Perhaps all is not as it seems. Yeah, and I've heard stuff like that, too. I mean, we don't necessarily know what happened. All we have is the official story given to us by the Army. And if he gets a long sentence, then you'll know, chances are he wasn't just following orders.
I can't remember what that what it's called when you come up with conspiracies to make yourself feel better about something that is wronged. That's what that sounds like to me.
Well, it might not have a name other than that.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have Scotty in Middleton. Good morning, Scotty.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Scotty.
I'm going to feel like Paul Harvey when I tell you this story. Who was the American citizen that was hanged by the British after the Second World War?
After the Second World War?
Yes.
It doesn't ring a bell to me. Who was it?
His name was William Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a radio name over in Britain during the Second World War. My mother used to listen to him, and I used to hear him myself. called him Lord Ho-Ho. And after the Second World War finished, he was captured by the British and executed. Yet he was an American citizen.
Well, was he spreading Nazi propaganda?
He was. That's what, they called him Lord Ho-Ho on the radio, and his call sign used to be Germany Calling, Germany Calling. I remember it well because I grew up during the Second World War, and he was an American citizen, and as I say, the British executed him. And many people ask, why did the British execute an American citizen? Well, the answer to that was that he used his father's passport. His father was British, and he used his father's passport to get into Britain just before the Second World War started, and he became a member of the Nazi Party in Britain. We had a Nazi Party. It was called the Black Shirts, and the gentleman that was the, well, I call him a gentleman anyway. His name was Mosley, Sir. I think it was, I forget now, Arthur Mosley. In fact, at the present day, his son was connected with the Automobile Association, and when the story came out here, he retired. But anyway, that was why they executed him, because he used his father's British passport to gain entry into the United Kingdom. Then he moved over to Germany. Anyway, gentlemen, hey, I'm enjoying your program this morning. Didn't you know how to get into your radio because of the 208 prefix? And when you mentioned it this morning, I tried it, and bingo.
Yeah, well done. Everybody's got to get used to that 10-digit telephone number now. All right, thank you, Scotty. Appreciate
the call. Yeah, I looked it up here, and it's very close to the story he told, Lord Ha-Ha. And, of course, the first thing, when he said Lord Ha-Ha, the first thing I thought of was Lady Gaga. Because, you know, Lord and Lady, I mean, that's the Lord of the Manor, the Lady of the Manor. And Ha-Ha and Gaga, that makes sense. So, you know, maybe partially she took her name from that, plus the, you know, Radio Gaga, the song by Queen. Anyway, Lord Ha-Ha was a nickname applied to the Irish-American William Joyce, who broadcast Nazi propaganda to Britain from Germany during the Second World War. And as Scotty said, the broadcasts opened with Germany Calling, spoken in an affected upper-class English accent, Upper British. The same nickname was also applied to some other broadcasters of English-language propaganda from Germany, but it is Joyce with whom the name is now overwhelmingly identified. There are various theories about its origin.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how relevant, but interesting.
Well, no, I mean, it is somewhat, because we were talking about deserters, and
right.
So anyone who has betrayed their service in some way, in this particular case, this was a traitor. But there are some people who consider it, you know, a deserter and a traitor to be pretty much the same thing.
Right, and I was just about to say that. I think that's the reason that, you know, we're going to see a sentence of life rather than
perhaps
as people have wanted, you know, for him to be killed, because there is a difference between traitor and deserter.
And you pointed out that there's been a last minute defense motion.
Yeah. Since Bergdahl pleaded guilty, now the defense team has put in a last minute motion to try and get a more fair sentence, because they say that President Trump's comments immediately after Bergdahl pleaded guilty now make it impossible for him to get a fair sentence.
And most of what Donald Trump said about him was during the campaign for president, when he was he was talking about getting a better deal. And he said one of the worst deals that was made during the Obama administration was trading, you know, five political prisoners for one no good traitor.
Yeah, and the defense team's contention now is that because he is the commander in chief, and this is an army colonel that will be deciding the sentence, that there is an issue with influence there.
Well, I think the person that gets to rule on that is the army colonel.
Yes, so I would think so.
I'm going to guess that won't
orders are probably not coming down on high.
Yeah. Art of Boise says, can Haley finally have their parade? No, they canceled that parade quite a long time ago. And I don't think they ever made plans to have it again. Originally, they were going to. You know, when he was being released, because the first story, there were rumors that he had walked away simply, but there were other rumors. I mean, when we first heard the story, simply all they said was that he had been captured by the Taliban.
Right.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for all we knew, he was out on patrol. Nancy of Napa says, good morning. Do you know the number of other soldiers who were hurt seriously by Bo's desertion and what their injuries were? We don't. There is one that is an injured soldier that is testifying today before the judge. And I don't think he's going to be terribly kind to Bergdahl, mm-hmm. which, you know, you can understand. I don't know. And it's somewhat disputed how many, you know, because they said that they routinely went out on paroles and things like, or on patrols anyway, not parole, went out on patrols anyway. And that in certain patrols, they went out places where they would have gone and were just told to keep an eye for Bergdahl. Mm-hmm. And if they got killed or something, then they don't know necessarily that it was simply because they were looking for Bergdahl. So that's been in dispute in the Army. So, no, I don't know the exact number. But it's, as most people have said, they were definitely affected by it. And Bill of Boise, he says, how come no one has asked Bo's fellow soldiers that were under the same command Bo was under in the same conditions if they saw anything out of the norm? I think they have.
Mm-hmm.
There was an investigation, and I'm pretty sure they asked some of his fellow soldiers if they have any of the same complaints that Bo was complaining about. We don't know the results of that. But my guess is that that was part of the investigation. It's 9:45. We'll be back.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
Idaho Talks Live, Chris Walton with Jay Bates. It's 9:50. Just a few minutes left to go, about 5 or 6 minutes left to go in the program here. Dave of Boise, he says, Bo was aware of what he was doing from the get-go. There are numerous ways to report any military inappropriate incident.
Mm-hmm.
The people from Guantanamo Bay were all high-ranking terrorist officers that went right back to doing bad things the day they were released. I wish people would stop mentioning he is from Idaho. It's embarrassing. Yeah.
Well, you know, he has to be from somewhere.
Well, basically, yeah.
It's just embarrassing for us.
And then let's see. Evan wrote back in to say, didn't relay the story to make myself feel better. He's talking to you about anything.
I realize
As
that.
I said, I don't have an opinion on Bergdahl. Rather juvenile that one of your hosts arrived at that conclusion.
Aw. I've made friends on my second day.
Yeah, well done. And let's see. Oh, that's okay. And he sent the same one twice.
He wanted to get the point across.
Right, exactly.
I got it, Evan.
Yeah, well done. I wanted to get to one more story here. And this is just, to me, this is just simply kind of interesting because, of, you know, it affects virtually everyone. I saw this headline. There's a new study that says Americans are retiring later, dying sooner, and they're sicker in between.
Oh.
So, in other words, retirement is getting shorter and people are not enjoying it. It says this is Bloomberg first reported this. The U.S. retirement age is rising as the government pushes it higher and workers stay in careers longer.
Right.
But lifespans aren't necessarily extending to offer equal time on the beach. Data released last week suggests Americans' health is declining and millions of middle-aged workers face the prospect of shorter and less active retirements than their parents enjoyed. Here are the stats. The U.S. age-adjusted mortality rate, a measure of the number of deaths per year, rose 1.2% from 2014 to 2015, according to the Society of Actuaries. That's the first year-over-year increase since 2005 and only the second rise greater than 1% since 1980. At the same time that Americans' life expectancy is stalling, public policy and career tracks mean millions of U.S. workers are waiting longer to call it quits. The age at which people can claim their full Social Security benefits is gradually moving up from 65 for those retiring in 2002 to 67 in 2027, and that is pretty gradual.
Mm-hmm.
Almost one in three Americans age 65 to 69 still working, along with almost one in five in their early 70s. Postponing retirement can make financial sense because extended careers can make it possible to afford retirements that last past age 90 or even 100, but a study out this month adds some caution to that calculation. Americans in their late 50s already have more serious health problems than people at the same ages did 10 to 15 years ago, according to the journal Health Affairs.
I feel like this is the most uplifting news I've heard on a Monday. Whew.
Well, it was either
Thanks, Chris.
It was either that, or I could rank Halloween candy from best to worst.
It's already, you know, looming out there enough that I have a 20-year sprint to retirement. Apparently, now it's longer, and I will be sicker once I get there.
Well, you know, at least you have that to look forward to, assuming that you can retire.
So, about that candy,
I like what George Carlin said years ago. He was talking about he never really understood people who spent years talking about how they were looking forward to retirement. He said, why would you do something every day of your life that you couldn't wait to stop doing? And there are a lot of answers to that. And of course, one of them is that you get yourself into a situation where you're supporting a lot of other people.
Right.
Your own children, for instance, your own family, and it's called a job. And not every job is taken for enjoyment. A lot of them are taken because you simply need the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go into a career. There are people who don't necessarily enjoy everything they do, but they go into it because they figure out where the highest reward will be, and they pursue that.
You may just end up being good at something, and if they pay you for that, that's fine. Might not be what you wanted to do. It's just that's what you're good at.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been a fly fisherman.
Well,
I don't think
yeah.
it pays very well.
Well, it depends. I mean, I'm sure there are three or four fly fishermen.
By the way,
in the world
I'm terrible at fly fishing.
Okay.
So.
But I'm sure there are three or four in the world who probably are reps for some company and make fairly good money. But like anything else, there's a lot of competition, and probably not very many make it to the very top of it. But something that they only recently started teaching this again in schools. For years, what they told people was that, you know, figure out something that you'll enjoy. And quite often, you know, people ended up with careers, you know, and yes, they were very enjoyable, but there were certain things they simply didn't know how to do. And one of them was make enough money to live on. But they started emphasizing in schools a few years back, again, you know, that you should continue your education and learn certain things and certain skills, and that you'll be better off in the long run.
I feel like it's a meme, though. Find something you love, do it every day of your life, and you'll end up hating it.
Yeah.
How's that for your depressing Monday?
There aren't any rules that can't be broken, I don't think.
It's true.
9:55. We will see you tomorrow.